Mr. Clarkson, reel 23.
Did you think gambling was confined to a kind of group of people who would be gamblers anyway?
Or yes, yes.
Rather than
oh, yes.
It wasn't a regular...
Oh, no, everybody didn't gamble by a long chalk. Now, in Portsmouth, what used to be the sailors' home at one time was bought up by the Admiralty, or would it be the... yes, I think it was the Admiralty. And it was converted into the Royal Naval Club with a bar and everything in it. Well, when I came home from the Red Sea, I met a couple of pals of mine that night before I went on leave, and they said, come up to the club. And I went up the club, and you know, there's the place with the lavatory, what I suppose was about 30-foot tiled floor with the lavatories all around there. And there must have been at least a dozen Crown and Anchor boards there, and crowds backing it. And, of course, there's one fellow, he's throwing the dice. His mate is collecting the money in and paying it out. And the usual call, the more you put down, the more you take out. And there, it was run, funny enough, all these boards were financed by one man at this particular time. And he was on the Canterbury, the same ship as I was. A very quiet-spoken little able seaman. A Scotchman he was, by the way. And he was on the... Loftus Jones was the captain of the destroyer he was on that was sunk early in the war. And Jock and another bloke swam with Loftus Jones, who had his legs blown off. They swam with him and got him ashore, but he was dead on arrival, and his widow left Jock £300. And Jock opened up a bookies business with that. Now, apart from all these Crown and Anchor boards he ran, and he paid people to run them, he also ran a betting business aboard the Canterbury ship. And the captain of the Canterbury used to have bets with him. And so did other officers. But it was all done in a quiet, methodical way. He wasn't the usual type of gambler who inhabits pubs and all that sort of thing. He was married, he lived a quiet life, but he was a businessman.
He was a businessman, an entrepreneur.
Yes.
But what about the smaller things around the ship? Card games. You said you played whist. There'd be no money involved in that.
No, just solo whist or something like that for a halfpenny point.
Yeah.
No, that was, there was, as far as I remember, there was nothing else. Hmm. No.
That was a different type of thing from Crown and Anchor, which is an organised...
Oh, yeah, we did have cockroaches in the Iron Duke.
You said you had cockroach races.
Yes, we had that with their various colours painted on them. But then that was only a real bit of fun. There was nothing no big bets on at all.
No. Can I go on then and ask you a little bit, or start, just open up the discussion on discipline in the Navy?
Yes.
Which we've come across here and there. We've mentioned it in various times. But can we just ask you outright, I mean, what was the standard of discipline?
Discipline?
Yes.
Actually, it was very strict. Very strict indeed. And the, for instance, late falling in or anything like that. Now, that's for the junior ratings. It couldn't be given to anybody above the rank of an AB. 10A, they used to call it.
10A.
I believe afterwards they called it number 10. And for being late on watch, for late on falling in, when they sounded both watches, or night time when they called the watch, anything like that, silly little thing, you've got so many days, 10A. Now, this 10A meant that you turned out, I think it was an hour in the morning before the remainder of the troops, you turned out and turned to. At dinner time, instead of having an hour and a quarter for dinner, you had half an hour for dinner. You didn't have any rum, that was stopped, and you worked again. Later on, in big ships, they used to be drill, rifle drill, or on the forecastle. But the general rule was extra work. Now, in the evening, you started work again, you only had half an hour for tea, and you worked in the dog watches. Now, this could go on for a fortnight. And it was a well-known thing. When I was in the Iron Duke, we had a commander there who was fighting for promotion, the great Trunky Fitzherbert. And he always reckoned to have 120 men at work at night time and first thing in the morning, apart from the ordinary work. And they were all 10A men. So it was quite easy to get 10A. Of course, if you had too much 10A during the year, that was a good you had for character that year. And when you had a good, it meant that you wouldn't get a good conduct badge for a long, long time, which in the end prevented you from ever getting a long service and good conduct medal. And then again, when you took your pension, that meant you lost a lot of money on that. Otherwise, staying ashore over your time, missing the boat to get back to the ship, that cost you a day's pay and a day's leave for 5 minutes up to 3 hours. Over that, 2 days pay and 2 days leave, see? And then, above that, of course, you got further punishment and loss of good conduct badge and everything like that.
Do you think these sort of punishments for 10A and this business, did it actually act to keep men thinking about keeping out of trouble? I mean, was that a major part of your kind of thinking about...
Oh, yes, because...
You know, you were watching this possibility.
Nobody liked that, you see, especially the biggest punishment was having your tot stopped.
Yes.
Nobody liked that. And then again, it was a proper nuisance. And latterly, I have seen it when they seemed to do away with the working part of it, or they didn't want them to work. And the duty PO, he didn't like the job. He had to take them at 12:30 to drill on the forecastle. And believe me, some of that drill was a little bit hard. Because I know one fellow we had in particular who went to the detention barracks afterwards. He was drafted there in charge. And he was really cruel. And when it was his turn to be peer of the day, he's had them running round the quarter deck with a rifle up above their head. And on one occasion, a sick bay PO said, "If you don't stop that, I shall report you." And he said, "You go to hell and do what you like." And this fella, he did go to the detention barracks afterwards, which that was a very bad place. Detention, if you went to a naval detention barracks, I've seen them, matter of fact, I took one once, and you halted about 25 yards from the gate of the prison, which was in the dockyard, the detention area. You halted them there, and you went up and knocked at the door, and out came one of the detention petty officers or chiefs. They were picked for the job, there's no doubt about it. And he just looked out and said, "Escort and prisoner, double match!" And you doubled, and the escort doubled as well. Now, that prisoner, if he was there for 28 days, he doubled for 28 days. And the food was very lacking there. And I've seen him for a couple of days overstaying their leave or something like that. Insubordination to an officer. Over the wall for 28 days. And I remember we had a messman once. He went over for 28 days. He came back the day he was discharged and he rushed straight to the cupboard and pulled out all the stale bread there was and sat down at it, just like a dog. Yeah, it was...
Tension barracks was really out to get you.
Oh, it was. I can remember a fellow who... He was shot afterwards. This is when I was in the prison service, and he went in the Navy. He was a fellow named, not Stonehouse, surname like that, and he was a well-known character. But Gray's, assault and police. Everybody was frightened of him, a bully. Stenhouse, that was his name. And one day, we'd had some trouble with him, and on one occasion, he was up the police court. Oh, he had to go in the Navy, that was it. And he went in the Navy. And while he was there, he deserted, and he was up for a few more crimes. And they said, the magistrate said, now, there was a naval officer there, would you deal with him if we send him back to the Navy? Oh, yes, be glad to get him back, they said. Well, it was 3 months after that, and Stenhouse came in again. And I said, I thought you went back to the Navy. Went back to the Navy, he said. They said, oh, yes, we'd like to have him back. They did. They brought him back and put him in detention. He said, and every time I looked as if I was going to talk, they filled my mouth in. And eventually, a naval officer came in one Sunday morning on a murder charge. And I was in the reception and had a look at it and did, with felonious intent, did kill and slay John Stenhouse. God, Tommy, I said, you'll be all right. You'll get away with this. And he did. But shot him.
But the Navy detention was to break a man's spirit. I mean,
it definitely would.
Yes. You didn't actually, you never served in the detention barracks.
Oh, no.
But you knew and from experience and from...
Yes.
From
and a petty officer, one of the most popular men I ever know, he did slip up and he went for 9 months, Tom Merrifield. And I remember Tom, he'd stick anything. And if you went to church in the dockyard on a Sunday, from the ships, church parties used to go. And the POs and chiefs used to line up two lines outside the detention barracks, and then they used to drive the cattle out. And all the detention people used to double out. They had to double to church. Nora's man, old Tom, he used to look over at us and grin. He stuck it. He got the George Medal afterwards. Yeah, a wonderful man he was, if ever there was one.
And he, you know, he wasn't broken by...
He wasn't broken, no.
He learned how to take it, obviously.
Of course, a lot of the POs in there in charge, they all knew Tom. They'd been messmates of his. And probably that made a difference.
Yes, yes.
But
it had a reputation, though, for undoing you. Would you say detention? It had a reputation for making you conform.
It,
shall we say,
put you right down. You didn't want to go there again. And that was detention. Oh, it was frightening. They reckoned the glasshouse in the army was bad enough, but the naval detention barracks was worse.
And the people in it were hand-chosen, would you say?
They were people volunteered for it. Mm-hmm. People who were sadists.
Yeah. They actually volunteered for detention.
Oh, yes, volunteered. It was a quiet number. They didn't have to go to sea, you see.
They must have found some real... they must have found some real characters who volunteered for detention. Can I just ask you, what did the other men feel about men who would volunteer for a detention barracks? How did the
Well, they never had any time for them, but...
you wouldn't see them anyway.
One fellow, I suppose this first one I knew, he was a... Oh, he was a sadist. I could understand him, he volunteered for it. I know another one we had, old Benson, he was... Drake, his name was. He was a chap who... devil may care sort of a fellow, didn't seem to worry about anything. But he volunteered for it to stop in Portsmouth so he wouldn't have to go to sea.
Yeah, of course, you can get that type as well.
Yes.
You,